Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So, Tennis Podcast from Roland Garros. I'm not there. I'm in England. David Law here, commentator for BBC Radio 5 Live. Catherine Whittaker not with us today. She's had a particularly busy day broadcasting for Eurosport and telling all the stories of the day. However, I have got a fantastic guest with us from our partners at The Telegraph, Charlie Eccleshare, one of their writers who is a specialist on tennis alongside Simon Briggs, their tennis correspondent. And Charlie, I think it is fair to say you are the fastest typer in the world, because you have to do the live blog, don't you, on the Telegraph website, and I've never seen anybody write so quickly in my whole life, trying to keep up to date with the number of courts, with action and stories going on. How's it been so far? What have been the main stories testing you today?
Yeah, it's been good. It's been fun. The thing I've started doing to really test myself is doing every point on a tiebreak. It used to be just do the tiebreak, but now it's we've stepped it up. You know, you've got to keep evolving. Today's been good. What was quite challenging was Norrie and Edmund's matches basically finishing simultaneously. So essentially trying to do two matches at the same time, which was quite challenging. But quite a good yin and yang, obviously, because you had one going the Brits' way and the other not so much.
No, isn't it interesting, though, to be talking about two British players in second-round action, both, well, one of them winning, Kyle Edmund, was a four-set winner in the end against Martin Fucsovics. And it was a strange old match. We'll get onto that in a second. And then Cameron Norrie resuming his match when we were talking to everybody from our Tennis Podcast recording of last night. It was two sets to love Luca Puy, and we were just talking about Cameron Norrie trying to get it into an extra day with the light fading, and that's exactly what he did. He did a great job, and then he kept it really close, didn't he, today? He got himself a set point. He nearly won it. We had one of those tie breaks that you would have had to detail in forensic detail at super fast speed, but as you say, this is a tournament without Johanna Konsa and Andy Murray in, where you are doubling up and talking about two British players in the second round of a slam. That hasn't really happened, has it?
No, exactly. And you know, the strangest thing is that Andy Murray isn't one of them. And they both equipped themselves really well today in different circumstances. You had Kyle Edmund. I actually thought he almost did an Andy Murray impression that match. You know, it was. I feel like I've watched that Murray match so many times that he wins in four sets with one set completely getting away from him, which is what happened to Edmund in the second set. And then you had Cameron Norrie really, I think, you know, exceeding expectations over the course of those 2 days, pushing Luca Puy really, really hard, so nearly getting into a fifth set when who knows what would have happened. You know, Norrie's very fearless. And he just couldn't quite eke out that tiebreak. I should mention as well, Heather Watson as well, you know, making it three Brits in singles action. And she'll be the only one, I think, who'll come away thinking she didn't quite do herself justice.
Yeah, I was listening to your Telegraph colleague, our good friend Simon Briggs, a regular here on the Tennis Podcast, who was commentating on BBC Radio alongside the team there. And towards the end of the match of Cameron Norrie, he said, you know, he really is a so-and-so, isn't he, Cameron Norrie? You know, there's something about him. He likes a bit of a scrap. He likes to get in the face of an opponent. He's irritating in a way that British players normally aren't. And I mean, you and I spoke about him in depth 3 months ago during that Davis Cup tie when Britain were in Spain and he was playing so well in that. I mean, I can see where Simon's coming from there.
Oh, definitely. And I think in being out there in Spain with him and the rest of the team, it was his kind of phlegmatism about the whole thing that certainly took me by surprise. You know, he just pulled off this massive shock win against Bautista Agut. And he basically looked like, what's the big deal? You know, why are you that surprised? He has that confidence. He has a bit of a swagger to him. He doesn't look intimidated, the fact that he's playing these high-ranked players. He looks like, yeah, that's where I should be. And he looks like he's totally comfortable in that setting. He's got a bit of an edge. He probably is a bit of a, you know, not the nicest person to play against. He said he fought like a dog today, which I thought summed it up quite well. And it is nice, you know, we've spoken about this before. I think that too many of these young guys are overly respectful, you know, when they're up against the players with a greater reputation. He seems no respect of reputation. He went out there and looked like he really believed he could beat Luca Puig. And those big wins will come.
Yeah, he did. I agree. Kyle Edmund, I like your description, the comparison to Murray in regard to the sort of scenic route that he almost took. Mm-hmm. His mind did appear to wander a little bit for a while, although I think that takes maybe a little bit away from Fucsovics, who's obviously a talent and won a title the week before. So he can play, but it does set up just a delicious-looking third-round match between Kyle Edmund and Fabio Fognini, doesn't it? Who, you know, you never know what you're going to get from day to day with that guy.
Oh, it's so exciting. I mean, I think it's quite unlucky on Edmund, actually, to get that as a third-round draw. You look at some of the other matches, and, you know, you'd feel pretty confident of Edmund beating a lot of the guys who are at that stage. Fognini is a horrible draw. You know, he's, especially on clay, he's such a talented shot maker. Talk about swagger earlier. Well, he's got it in spades. You know, he's kind of peacock on the court. He looks like he just loves it. You'd think that would be given a big court and, you know, for him to really strut his stuff. I'd actually make Fognini probably the minor favourite for that one. And just, you know, linking it back to Murray as well. I think you'll remember that 2014 Davis Cup tie in Naples, I think it was, when Fognini took Murray to the cleaners, and that just did not happen in Davis Cup. But, you know, Edmund's playing well enough, certainly to have a good chance. But, yeah, Fognini on clay, tough third round draw.
Yeah, it's an on his day kind of thing with Fognini, isn't it? Because on his day, he can beat pretty much anybody. He's beaten Nadal over the best of five sets, as you say. He really outplayed Andy Murray in Davis Cup. That just does not happen very often. I can only think of Juan Martin Del Potro as another one who's done that. But equally, if Edmund punches the clock regularly in that match, You can sometimes see Fognini just frankly lose it, and it can go the other way dramatically as well. So I would agree with you. I think I'm not convinced that Edmund will enjoy the circus that Fognini can bring, and his ability to maybe mess him around a bit. But that will be interesting to follow. We will find out. But I tend to agree with you. Elsewhere today, Rafael Nadal was, well, frankly, in 50 sets in a row on a single surface winning form, wasn't he? I mean, what he did to poor old Guido Pella was just rude. I mean, you know, yeah. Pella didn't play badly, and he got beaten 6-2, 6-1, 6-1.
Honestly, that first set, Pella played really well. He had game points in 5 of the 8 games. He had 15 30s in two of the 3 others. You know, he was really in that match, and playing out of his skin, and he lost it 6-2. You know, and he won 4 games in total of a match that he genuinely couldn't have played a whole lot better. And Nadal, the first set, he was grinding games out. From there on in, it was just frightening, spraying winners off either wing. And it occurred to me today that he hasn't lost a match at the French Open in 3 years, since 2015. And I was thinking back to that match and the kind of obituaries that were being written about him. You know, Djokovic just schooled him, and it was almost sad to watch. I was thinking then, if you'd said that, you know, 3 years on, he won't have lost another match at Roland Garros, he'll be this invincible. I mean, it just would have seemed crazy. He seemed so down and out. And now you can't imagine anyone laying a glove on Nadal here. You know, he just looks so much better than the field. Who's going to challenge him?
Yeah, he really had to rebuild himself back then, didn't he, confidence-wise? And it's why I still think that it is doable that Djokovic may be able to do the same, because I know Djokovic has had physical problems, but I do feel that a lot of it is just lack of confidence, lack of that feel that he had back then. And I don't see any reason why somebody as great as he is, as somebody who's won as much as he is, as long as he's fit, why would he not be able to rediscover it if he's prepared to put himself through what Nadal put himself through?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we do fall into this trap often with sport. We can't quite comprehend that it will ever not be exactly as it is right at that very moment.
Yes.
And, you know, there was a time where Djokovic was winning at such a canter that we thought, when will he ever stop winning Grand Slams? He's just going to win the calendar slam this year. He'll probably do it next year. I mean, he was genuinely dominating to that extent. Then all of a sudden, you know, a few months, a year later, and you're thinking, oh, Djokovic, that's him done. He'll never win another slam. And Nadal shows, he's shown it about three times that we've said, right, well, that's it. You know, clearly that's it for him. But it does change so quickly. Djokovic could win a slam this year, and then you're looking into next year and saying, oh, could he catch Roger Federer's total? You know, it just changes so quickly. And Djokovic definitely can do a Nadal or a Federer, you know, or Serena Williams, who we'll come and talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah, we will. Just another couple of quick ones on the men before we get on to Serena Williams and the rest of the women's draw. There was a great line I saw from Chris Clary from the New York Times on social media. Just he'd been keeping an eye on a match that, you know, doesn't make the headlines, but featured the elder brother of Alexander Zverev, Misha Zverev, up against Sergei Stakhovsky, two players who just love to serve and volley, and they don't care that it's clay, and they just went at each other, and the net approaches in three sets were well over 100. And I just thought, crikey, I mean, I think that you there was an option to get a stream of that match, but if I was there, if you could just have the afternoon off and go and see a tennis match, that's the one I think I'd go for.
Oh, yeah. To watch two out-and-out serve volleys, I mean, it doesn't happen anymore, does it? You know, Misha Zverev gave us that glimpse of it at the Australian Open of 2017. I think there are a lot of articles written there and be like, yes, this could be it. You know, does this herald a kind of renaissance of the serve volleyer? And of course, then the kind of sobering reality of tennis and the clay court season then took over. It's great to see them both. It's almost like they made a gentleman's agreement. Like, well, look, I'm going to do it. It's a kamikaze tactic. But if you do it as well, then we're kind of evil. And you know what's great as well? Misha Zverev's next opponent is Kevin Anderson, who also, I mean, not a serve volleyer as such, but he's hardly a kind of clay court natural. So you'd think, you know, Misha could employ those tactics again.
Yeah, no, it certainly opens things up. Now, we had, on the eve of this tournament, Charlie, as we always do, we had our predictions competition with our Kickstarter backers who'd all chipped in to help keep the tennis podcast going. And we take them on, Catherine and I, and student Matt and Simon Briggs, your colleague, and Rosie the dog. Everybody enters. And only two people, one of them Rosie the dog, so not strictly speaking a person. Only two entries in the men's predictions competition did not pick Nadal, and we're talking over 20 people into this league. Are you prepared to be a third?
No.
Okay, then.
It's one of those, isn't it, where you want to say it because it's always more interesting to sort of be contrarian, but it's really hard to make that case rationally. Yeah, it's not impossible, like, especially as it was 2 years ago, wasn't it, where he looked like he was in good nick and then got an injury. It's possible he could pick up an injury. But looking at the draw, it's very, very hard to see him not making the quarters for a start. And then once he gets there, on that stage, I mean, even getting a set against him feels like a gargantuan effort. To get three, I just can't see who's going to do that. Who's going to really believe in themselves? You know, I was talking to Robin Soedling, the interview I did, and he just said, you know, a lot of it is, you know, one of two men to have beaten Nadal or Roland Garros. And he said so much of it is about belief. You know, do these guys really go out on court and think they're going to beat Nadal? And I can't see anyone having that belief and then having the nerve to kind of be as aggressive as you need to beat Nadal.
And Sodling did believe, and he was prepared, in Jeff Tarango's words, to get in his kitchen.
Absolutely, and that ties back to Cameron Norrie as well. I think it's great to see that. You want players who aren't really intimidated by reputations, who, yeah, they're going to make life a bit difficult for you. Look at Lucas Rossol in that 2012 Wimbledon upset. You know, he was a little bit nasty. He upset Nadal. The following year, he kicked over his water bottles, which is just hilarious. But, you know, maybe it'll take something like that to unsettle Nadal. But I think the rest of the field at the moment looks too nice, too civilized to do something like that.
Yeah, and Nadal's just a bit too good, quite yeah. honestly. So anyway, he's through. Denis Shapovalov went out today at the hands of Martyra, who looks a bit of a player from Germany. Diego Schwartzman was a winner today. Marin Cilic as well. And then John Isner had a couple of tie breaks, as per usual. Juan Martín Del Potro looked a bit better today. I mean, he was an injury doubt on the the eve of this tournament, and he came through in straight sets against Julian Beneteau. But yeah, lots of big names still remaining. It'll be fascinating. Nadal against Richard Gasquet next, and he always beats Gasquet, doesn't he?
Yeah, so. 15 love, he leads that. That's not a score in a game. That's genuinely the head-to-head. And you imagine that would become 30 love if they were to play another 15 times. His game just doesn't match that well. He doesn't really have the weapons to hurt Nadal. And, you know, when you've lost 15 times, it must be hard to gee yourself up and, you know, really talk about self-belief going on court. I don't imagine Gasquet will have tons of it.
No. Well, the story, I mean, we're recording probably half an hour after the great Serena Williams left the court, left Philippe Chatrier court. However, she will be coming back because she won through against Ash Barty in three sets, having lost the first. And Barty was playing a very canny game. She's a lovely player to watch, slicing the backhand, whipping the forehand and moving well. And Serena Williams's movement was exposed a little bit in that first set, I thought. And she's not always the most comfortable looking person on clay. And then suddenly in the second set, the real Serena came out. And in her words, in fact, in the on-court interview afterwards, she says, I decided to bring Serena out. And it was like a superhero just suddenly arrived. And she started roaring with every shot, both when she hit it and if she were winning a point. She was just imposing her will and her aura on the match. And I thought right at the start of that second set, I wonder whether Ash Barty can handle this, because I saw her a couple of weeks ago play a really good three-set match against Maria Sharapova, who similarly was just going straight at her and it felt like was trying to intimidate her, and eventually Sharapova got the better of her. And Serena Williams is Sharapova times three in terms of, well, first of all, ability. We know about their head-to-head, plus just aura and presence. And Williams just, that was a stunning victory for me. I'm sure she's well short of her best, but that was just a reminder of how good she is and what a force she is in the game.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought that was a really good point about Ash Barty. I interviewed her last year, actually, and she's lovely. She's very friendly and, you know, she's very self-deprecating. And I do wonder if she kind of has that killer instinct, especially against Serena, as you say, to really back yourself against this sort of force of nature that Serena is. And, you know, Serena hit this backhand winner when she was down a set and a break. And that just seemed to, yeah, transform her. You know, after that, she was going after her shots. She was celebrating them wildly. It was frightening. She was just suddenly in the zone and looked unbeatable. I think, yeah, if you look at it objectively and say, was that a perfect performance? Of course it wasn't. There were mistakes in there. But she played smart as well. I thought there were a few times where she thought, I'm going to conserve my energy here. Once she had the break in that third set, she did a kind of Pete Sampras-esque thing of not throwing returning games, but being a bit canny about how much effort she's going to put in. She was guessing on some returns, because she backed herself that she could serve it out, and she did. And the willpower to you know, from a set down, a breakdown against one of the best movers, you know, someone who's very smart, Ash Barty. She, you know, she's got great drop shots. She's got great slices. I would have liked to see her get to the net a bit more. You know, she's a great volleyer, excellent doubles player. But it's very hard to think clearly when you're up against the greatest player who's ever played the game. And that force of will to see that was incredible. And be interesting to see where she goes from here, because she could, with all the intensity that she has, it wouldn't be a surprise if she carried on winning. At the same time, if someone was to come along and, you know, beat her reasonably comfortably, you'd think, well, yeah, that kind of makes sense given how much she's played recently.
And would you believe, dear listeners, that she is one match win away, effectively two match wins because they've both got a win, obviously, against playing against Maria Sharapova in the fourth round. Just imagine. I mean, that is one match win for either player away from happening. I mean, it's got to happen, hasn't it?
It is. Tennis a delicious gods. Prospect, isn't it? And it's a shame tennis isn't like other sports where, you know, if this was boxing or something, it would just be set up to happen. It's like the kind of Nadal Federer US Open curse. If either of their opponents get in the way, that really would be so cruel on all of us.
A bit like when Serena was trying for the calendar slam and Roberta Vinci got in the way, although she was absolutely stunning that day. She was brilliant. Yeah. But still, come on, you're not supposed to get in the way of that storyline.
Well, the best thing about that was all the people who had final tickets and then were, you know, had spent thousands of pounds and, you know, celebrities turning up. And then, to see Vinci against Panetta in the final, you know, which is quite a niche match at the best of time. Yes. Wasn't quite what they'd anticipated.
I mean, the other interesting element to it is actually on paper, both Serena Williams and Maria Sharapova are underdogs in their respective matches, because Serena is up against Yulia Gerges, who's the 11th seed. Sharapova is up against Karolina Pliskova, who's the 6th seed. So, I mean, come on, Charlie, lay your neck on the line. Is it going to happen?
I think Sharapova will lose. I think Serena will win. And Sharapova will lose. So we'll have, which would also be really good, a Serena Pliskova fourth round.
Yeah, it would be good. I actually think Sharapova Williams will happen. But there, you know, I do like a bit of soap opera and drama. So, you know, I can convince myself on any of these movie script endings. It's not a problem.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. What else has happened today? Simona Halep was a winner, much more straightforwardly today against Taylor Townsend. You mentioned Heather Watson going out to Elise Mertens, who actually looks like a good player at the moment. Angelique Kerber was a winner, as was Kiki Burton. So most of the big players won. Caroline Garcia got through. Muguruza. I tell you what, Muguruza was named couple of days ago as a player that if she were to get into the second week of this thing, she actually in many ways becomes the favourite, because she's that sort of player. She's the Stan Wawrinka of the women's circuit, in as much as you get her on a roll, well, how do you stop her?
Yeah, you get her on a roll and you get her motivated, and when there's that carrot dangled of a Grand Slam title, she comes alive. Yeah, it sounded like she was sort of a bit of a bitty performance today, but, you know, did enough, and you're going to have those in the first week. Sam Stosur are next for her. You'd obviously make her a big favourite. And then, yeah, I mean, we know there isn't an outstanding favourite, you know, for the title in the women's draw. She's definitely got as good a shout as anyone.
Yeah, she has. Anything else stand out today for you while you were watching? I know Catherine Whittaker, I saw her doing a little piece on our Yorkshire friend earlier today, and got him interviewing Kyle Edmund, which was a meeting of Yorkshire minds. So that was fun. Anything else has stood out for you today?
I enjoyed, again, just with the, if you had this free afternoon and you weren't working and you could just go and watch around the courts, Court 6, there was a battle of the lucky losers, I think it was. Zopp from Estonia and Bemelmans from Belgium. And Bemelmans won the first two sets, and then Zopp came back to win in five. And kind of raucous atmosphere out there. Kind of both players seemed to generate this huge support. And I thought that was quite a nice story, especially in a tournament where, you know, lucky losers have been quite a big talking point.
Yeah. No, I agree. I do like the, and that's the beauty of these slams, really. I think as well, if you wander around the qualifying round courts, I mean, there are stories within stories of every court out there. You know, there's somebody's life on the line, their livelihood, their Marco Trungolitti journey to try to make it big. You know, and so much of this happens. I mean, it's just a shame that we don't get to tell all these stories, really.
Yeah, I know they do. You know, that's why it was so nice, the Trungoletti one, because, you know, it did receive such a wide audience, and I think it really captured the imagination. You know, similar to that, you know, the Marcus Willis one for me always sticks out from a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
you know, I think people can really empathise with the, you know, someone grinding away and then having their 15 minutes or yeah, however long it lasts.
Just before I go through the order of play and we sign off for the night, Charlie, I'm going to do this with you because Catherine would just not allow this. So, but she's not on the podcast tonight, so that's fine. I can do whatever I like. It's absolutely fantastic.
I'm like
fantastic.
The soft-touch parent you go to.
Yeah, you are. So I asked on social media before the tournament, aside from Nadal Söderling at Roland Garros, what is the most shocking result you can ever remember apart from that one? Can you think of anything good? Let's see. I've got loads of contributions from our Twitter followers here, but I'll just give you first go at it.
That's a good one. I remember that the Correa Gaudio final of 2004, where Correa was huge favourite, had beaten Tim Henman in the semis and led two sets to love, and then completely fell apart and lost it in five, which, again, for a final was really unusual. Martin Verkerk, the kind of general run to the final of the year before, I think it was 2003. I remember just, you know, tons of strange upsets for him on the way. But I'm sure I'm missing some obvious ones. So
I'm impressed, actually. These are good contributions, and a couple of them are amongst those on my list here. Edmund Wong says, when a top form Stan beat a seemingly destined to finally win the French Open, Novak Djokovic, after he'd beaten Nadal in the semi-final. A couple of people going for that. Wendy is going for the 1990 final, hairpiece defeating Agassi, which is a bit harsh, because actually it was Andres Gomez who beat Andre Agassi, a huge shock at the time. But yes, as we were to learn later in Andre Agassi's autobiography, he was wearing a hairpiece and not actually his real hair. And that created a bit of a story in its own right. Tennis Fan 01 says, Chang beating Lendl. Nothing more shocking than that. Just go and take a look at the video of the day of this teenager against Lendl hitting underarm serves. We have Tennis Gravy, who says, Ostapenko's comeback from a set and three love down against Halep last year. No, I'm definitely with you there. Susie says, what about when Serena lost to Rosano? What was that, about 5 years ago, something like that?
Definitely first round, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a huge shock at the time. Gustavo Kuerten winning the title the first time in 1997. I must admit, when he won that title, I genuinely thought, well, who is this guy? I'd barely heard of him. Chang beating Edberg in the 89 final. He obviously went on from that Lendl win to do so. We've got just a couple more here. We have... let's see. Maioli beating Hingis. Yes,
I was just going to say, from when you said 97, that reminded me of the Maioli Hingis. That's the only Grand Slam match she lost all year.
Some good memories going on here. And what about this from David Moreno? Gilbert Schaller beating Pete Sampras. Yes, that was a bit of a surprise. I remember that one. And McEnroe losing to Lendl after being two sets up in his glory year. McEnroe.
And that's the one McEnroe in his book talks about it being the defeat that hurt him more than any other.
That's Gavin Rang who says that one.
One other one as well, not so much a huge shock, but it was a kind of shocking occasion, was the Hingis-Graf 99 final, where Hingis was a set and a break up and seemingly in control. And do you remember, it all fell apart horribly and she left the court in tears and her mum had to bring her back out. And she never won she won one more Grand Slam after that. But No, actually she didn't. I don't think she won another Slam. That was the end. No,
crikey.
I think it was the 99 Australian Open, I think, was her last Grand Slam.
Wow. That's amazing to think, yeah. Remember it well. Great memories, Charlie. Enjoyed reminiscing about those with you and all of our Tennis Podcast listeners. At Tennis Podcast, if you'd like to follow us, we're also on Facebook and Instagram. You can also leave us a review if you liked what you've heard on a daily basis over the course of the French Open. We'll be with you every day during the French Open with daily editions of the Tennis Podcast. We're brought to you in association with Charlie's media organisation, The Telegraph. Loads of great stories there for you to read. Charlie, thanks for joining us. It's been lovely to have you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
It's been great to have you. Tomorrow we've got loads on the order of play, including Alexander Zverev against Damir Zhumer on Châtrier Court. Caroline Wozniacki is in action. Camilla Giorgi against Sloane Stephens a little bit later. That's a big hitting affair. And a lot of people think Sloane Stephens might do something here. Talking about big hitting, get a load of this one on court. Suzanne Longland to start the day. Madison Keys against Naomi Osaka. My goodness, I would not want to be a tennis ball in that. So we will be back with another tennis podcast for you tomorrow. We are produced, our executive producers are Melanie Bowes, tennisballs.com and Triple S. Mascot is Charlie the Ferret. And don't forget, you can enter our Tennis Pod Castaways competition to try to win a trip to La Manga Club, one of our sponsors. Go to at Tennis Podcast to find out how you do that, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.